Hello, and welcome to the Feathers and Flowers podcast.
Welcome to our everyday life on the homestead. Chickens, goats, gardening, recipes, sustainable living, and more. Welcome to episode 6 of the Feathers and Flowers podcast. It's almost time for baby goats, so today we're talking about all that we're doing to prepare for kidding season.
Yep, it is time. The time has come for the baby goats.
Yes, it's the most exciting time of spring, in my opinion.
It is officially goat season, and the barn is officially ready for baby goats.
Yes.
I finished it up. It's got the big gate on it for the stall. It's got fresh bedding down ready to go for whoever decides to go first.
Yep, and it could be... Like, we don't know exact dates for Bunny and Bonnet because they were bred before we got them. And we know a general time frame, but we don't know exact dates like we do for Ethel and Ruby.
According to the note that I have in my hand from the person that we bought them from, Bunny's date of giving birth should be close to...
Tentative due date.
Yeah, tentative due date should be... 02/29/24, which is, you know, coming up quick.
Yes. But it could also be they were with the buck. She said they were with the buck from basically the whole month of October.
Yeah.
So it could be literally any time during the month of March, pretty much. So I would say that Bunny will probably be the first to go, but we could be surprised. We know Ethel's due date is the 11th of March, so even if we don't know exactly when Bunny and Bonnets are, I mean, Ethel's is pretty rock solid.
Yeah, well,
so she shouldn't be any earlier or much long after that. I know, like, the average like time period for goats is 150 days. That's give or take a few days. And I've also heard recently that Nigerian dwarves go more like 145. So I'm not sure entirely how true that is, but I'll have to research it some more. But
I know if you go according to like ligaments and how like soft they're getting, Bunnies and Ethels are extremely soft.
Yes.
Bonnies is a little bit, well, the last time I checked, they were a little bit more stiff. But either way, all three of them are coming up on their due dates rapidly.
Yep.
Any day now, we could walk out to the barn and there'll be baby goats.
Yes, which I hope that's not the case. I'd rather be part of it.
Same.
And be there to help in case something goes wrong. I feel like, though, in my past experience, like, with the baby goats growing up on the farm every year, I feel like the ones that we were there to watch had more trouble, and then the ones that just did it without us knowing and we came out to baby goats had no trouble. Like, I don't know why I felt like that was the issue, or like that was always like the how it worked out.
That's how it worked out with Ethel the last time that she kidded too.
Mm-hmm.
Because I literally just went out there to check on her around lunchtime because I got off work early that day and you were at your grandparents' house. And I showed up and there were two baby goats and one on the way.
Yep. Yeah, one time growing up, because me and my sisters played sports. So most Saturdays looked like ball games, like three in a row typically, because we all were different age groups. So we had come home from a ball game and had went up there to check on them because we knew that they were, you know, about to be due. And one had given birth and she was still in the process of giving birth. And we had went up there and... one of the babies had rolled like outside of the fence so that she couldn't get to him. And then, another, I can't remember if she was already born or if she, that was the one she was having at that time. I think she was in the process of having her, but she was stillborn. And then there was one more and he was breech. And we had trouble getting him out. Of course my mom was the one that was mainly doing things, and I was working, helping the one that was outside the fence when we found him warm up and stuff. He was still breathing, but he was not moving a whole lot. But that was little Bill.
Yep.
He was so cute. But he had like an overbite. It was the cutest thing. But Ralphie, he was the one that was breech. And so we finally got him out and he didn't have a heartbeat. And my mom did like goat CPR on him with two fingers. And it worked. And he started breathing. And then she like cleaned his nose and everything off. I mean, I was very young for that. And I still remember that very, very vividly, I feel like. But I learned a lot that day.
I mean, I feel like CPR is pretty across the board as long as you're depressing the chest or the rib cage enough to get the heart to start beating manually. I'm pretty sure it's generally across the board correct. As long as the heart's beating, you're good to go.
Yeah, which it wasn't beating, and then it was, which she didn't expect him to live because he was breech and because she had had other troubles birthing the stillborn little girl. And then it took a while to get him out. So usually after a certain point, if they haven't gotten out yet, especially if they're not head first, then there's a good chance that they won't survive. But
right. And those were Bora goats, which are around the same size as Ethel. So
they're a little bit, well, they're probably the same weight, but they're a little bit shorter, but they're much stockier.
Right. I mean, when we first started dating, you still actually had, about said Molly, that's not right.
Millie,
that's right. You Millie still had Vanilli. Millie. And she was very, like, because her and Ethel lived in
together
the same
for
pasture
a
for a while.
Millie was old. And she was the last one remaining from our original little herd.
Right. Ethel was probably a good head or more taller than her. But if you had Millie standing directly in line behind Ethel, you could definitely see Millie sticking out around her.
Oh, yeah.
She's stocky.
If they could play tug of war, Millie against Ethel, Millie would definitely win.
And she died old.
Yeah.
She died peacefully of old age.
Yep. She was a sweet girl.
Mm-hmm.
Millie Vanilli.
Yep. So you've had experience, and I've had one freshening experience with larger goats, but this will be our first experience with miniatures.
The dwarves, yeah. I'm nervous.
Same.
I don't know why. Like, I feel like I've seen so many people posting, like, because I'm in that goat emergency group on Facebook and a 911 like vet only group on Facebook for goats. That's probably a bad idea with my like anxiety, because like, of course, that's what those groups are there for. So of course the majority of the posts are going to be emergency situations. So like, I'm sitting here thinking, man, all I'm seeing for goat births this year is a bunch of losses and breach and troubles, but like, that's all that's pretty much posted in that group. So I gotta remember to like filter.
Right. It's just like if you watch the news constantly, you're going to be like, man, everything's terrible. You just got to change the channel every now and then.
Yeah, I don't watch the news or TV much. We don't even
have
cable. We have Netflix.
Yeah, we have a little bit of Netflix, but that's about it.
Yeah, so anyways, so today we're talking about like what we're doing to prepare for kidding season this year, and kind of a little glimpse into like what some of our supplies look like and signs to look for that we look for whenever labor is about to start, and then like a little bit of aftercare. I feel like this could probably be like a bunch of podcasts because I could talk for days about goats, I feel like.
Oh yeah.
But not in like a weird like conceited like I know everything kind of way, but just like telling stories about my past experiences and then also just goats in general. I don't know.
I've not been into goats as long as you have growing up on the farm. But I mean, hey, I will say this much. I have bought two, because technically I didn't buy our last billy goat, but I've bought two billy goats now. I have sold two billy goats. And I feel like I might not be as like well-versed in the nanny side, but I am well-versed in the billy side of goats. So I've picked out two good billies so far. Both of them have to be black and white, but I feel like I got that part down pat. And I mean, everybody you talk to has something different to say. I mean, obviously, like, you know, we'll talk about it in a little bit, but like Famacha and everything else is kind of like pretty general of like how to check and everything, but everybody does something different. I mean, the first lady that we sold the billy goat to, our very first billy, he like, I felt so bad for him because when she was checking him out, I mean, she was like looking in his eyelids, looking in his rear end, checking his scalp, checking his teeth, checking his ears. I was like, man, he's getting a full physical right here, right in the parking lot. And then second people just loaded him right up and took him.
Yeah, I mean, some people are more concerned with like the little details, I guess. They don't want to bring anything into their herd or farm that's going to bring disease or anything into their herd. But some people have a lot. Like for us, we have a small area, so we definitely wouldn't want to bring that to our farm or our area. But
the good thing is right now, like the spot that we're at has never had any kind of pasture animals on it. So it started off clean. They don't have any worms right now that we know of. You know, last time we got them checked, you know, they were worm-free. That vet actually said that it was the most boring, like, fecal exam she's ever done because there was no eggs.
Yeah.
So, like, we've kept it super-duper clean. So it would really stink to bring in an animal that had worms because once you introduce them, you can't really get rid of them.
Yeah. So, yeah, so we try to be as prepared as possible so that our kidding season will go as smoothly as possible. Of course, you could never know what's going to exactly happen. I mean, we can try our dead level best, but something could still go wrong and us not be completely prepared for that. But we don't like to be unprepared for things we can be prepared for. So before leading up to kidding, probably about a month and a half to a month before. I mean, we're always like out with our goats and like checking them and making sure they're good even when they're not pregnant, but like especially when they're pregnant, about a month and a half to a month before, we really start like checking the does leading up to kidding. Roman mentioned it a minute ago, and I'm pretty sure this is how you say it. I've always just seen it spelled, but maybe I've heard the vet say it a couple of times. The Famacha. Checking that, which is, if you don't know anything about that, it's basically like a scorecard for like the coloring of their like membranes behind their bottom like lids, eyelids. You have to like, I can't remember like the acronym for it or whatever, about like pushing and popping and pulling and all that.
I know that, like, I feel like it takes us way, like when that one lady came out and checked the billy goat, like she popped the Famacha out like instantly. The last lady that we bought the goats from, like she popped it out instantly.
Yeah.
Like I'm not that good. Like it takes me a good minute to get like the Famacha like membrane to where I can see it.
Yeah. Because you have to like, you have to shut their eye and then you have to like put kind of push on it. And then you have to pull the one down, and yeah,
it's a process,
but yeah, it's hard to like describe. You'd have to be like show and tell.
You can literally just go to YouTube and look up like how to check a goat's Famacha.
Yeah. So basically, for a good Famacha, you want it to be like red. That's like the best, and that means that they probably don't have parasites, or at least like a heavy load of them. Pink is also good. But when it starts to get like lighter pink, that's when you should start being a little concerned. And then like obviously white and gray is like bad, and that should definitely be a sign. And a lot of times they can be white or gray, and you can take like a fecal to the vet and they won't show like a lot of worms. That can also mean like they're anemic or something like that. But either way, that's a cause for concern.
I feel like, and we've learned this really just more so in the last 2 years, 3 years, I feel like it's very goat dependent. So like some goats really, 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 like when they have no load at all and they're super healthy, theirs will never get to that super like bright reddy pink.
Right. You have to know your goats, like your goat's normal, like they're normal.
Right.
Like what's normal for one goat may not be normal for the other goat. So
like I know for a fact, just from checking them, like I can say it confidently right now, that Ruby has a much redder pink Famacha than Ethel does. Ethel's never gets quite as bright red as Ruby's does.
Yeah. Yeah. You have to have a baseline for what to expect, because if you don't know your goats, then you don't know when something's wrong, really. It's harder to tell. So we do that, and then, of course, based on, like, what we find with that, we'll take fecal samples to the vet to check for parasites. We don't deworm goats on, like, a schedule or just, you know, oh, we see that looks bad, so we deworm. Even if they have, like, diarrhea or something, we typically won't deworm unless we take fecal to the vet first, just because we don't want to contribute to parasite resistance with the dewormers. So we always take fecal to the vet and see what that says before we deworm. And of course, you know, we do that in a timely manner. We don't wait around to see if it's going to clear up. But so far, typically we take fecals to the vet twice a year, once in this early spring, like now is when we're doing that. I actually need to do that like this week. But yeah, for sure. But yeah, and then we do it again in the fall, usually after the first frost, which we did it this past fall, and they were good to go.
Yep, that's literally when the vet said, this is the most boring fecal I've ever inspected.
Yeah, and then we also will do it if needed. Like, Ethel did develop diarrhea once earlier in the year, or last year, and we took a fecal just to be safe, and she was fine. It was just, she ended up clearing up almost before we even took it to the vet, but,
yeah, I think the vet said it just pretty much had to do with the extreme wet weather we had.
Yeah. Stress and stuff like that. And probably the green starting to come in too.
Yep. We kind of moved her over from your parents' farm. We moved her over here. It was green that she had never had over here, a different right. type of green, a lot of green access, and then the stress of being over here, plus I think it rained for a week straight when we brought her over yeah. here. It was just a lot.
But yeah, so that's one thing we do, and then we also are always like monitoring their body condition. We do that year-round, like I said, but especially now, we're looking to make sure their coats are like soft and not like really coarse, and that they're, you know, have a good color and there's not any like bald spots or anything, because that can indicate like a copper deficiency or another mineral deficiency. And just making sure that they're overall healthy looking, that they're not underweight or overweight, because I've seen some fat goats. yeah. Which with the dairy goats, they don't tend to get, especially Nubians, they don't tend to get as fat. The Nigerian dwarves can get pretty plump.
Well, I mean, your dad thought that Ruby was pregnant before we even had a billy goat, like before she'd ever been with a billy goat.
Right.
When he came over, she was just a fat little sucker.
Yeah. Which that's also can be a sign of worms as well, a big old pot belly. But yeah, so we always like to make sure that they their body condition is good and healthy. And then, which we'll talk about a little bit more later, but during the last like month of pregnancy, we're also starting to watch the udder area to see if they're starting to bag up, which in my experience, some goats will bag up a month or weeks before giving birth, and some will literally bag up like a couple of days or a couple of hours before giving birth. So it just depends on the goat.
Right. I mean, Ethel, when she had her first freshening, we had put the billy goat in there. We had knew that there was a chance that she would be pregnant. We kept an eye on her. Like, we thought, she looks like she's getting bigger, but it's also like she's eating a lot more hay and everything, because we had just opened up that new pasture for her and the billy goat. And we had noticed, it was literally just like one evening we went out there and fed her, and I was like, man, she's looking like she's got some pretty big bags. And then the next night we went out there and I was like, gosh, them things are doubled in size. And so we tested and there was milk that came out. So we put her in the kitting barn, and then literally the next day, within 12 hours, she kitted.
Yep. So yeah. And then also ligaments, which we'll talk about more in depth. But they will also start to loosen and relax as birthing gets closer. So, that's another thing we check for pretty much every day, to see how loose they are. Cause like on a normal, like goat that's not pregnant, even they'll kind of feel like hard, like a hard rubber band or something. I don't know. They're not squishy at all.
You can feel the bone, like obvious, the bone is hard. It just feels like bone, and you can feel the transition into a ligament. It literally just gives I'm just a little bit more. It just kind of feels more of like a soft spot, but you can 100% tell the difference when they start softening up, when they're getting close to that. It's crazy how soft they get. Yeah. And then, I mean, it's crazy.
Yeah. And then another thing we start doing about a month before, which obviously this is our first time that we'll be actually milking, because the goats I had growing up weren't milk goats. And then we didn't milk Ethel last time she gave birth. I don't know why we didn't really think about it, but we didn't. So this is the first time we've done this, but that's milk stand training. Roman built a very nice milk stand.
Kind of. It's kind nice. Of. It perfectly fits the minis. Just didn't realize how big Ethel was.
Yeah, he made up the plans himself, but I had looked up the specifications for a full-size Nubian goat, and we went by that because we knew if she fit on it, then the minis would fit on it.
Yep.
And, yeah, she doesn't fit on it.
Well, that's also when we decided to look into Nubians a little bit more. Like, not that we didn't know about Nubians already, but that's when we learned that there are two types of Nubians, the Anglo-Nubian and American.
Yep. And she's Anglo, which they're the hugest ones of all.
The biggest.
Yes. But yeah, that's a funny story. So now we're going to have to figure something else out with Ethel. So we haven't been able to do milk stand training with her. Although every time I feed her, I have been like doing the same thing I would if she was on a milk stand. But she doesn't stand as still because she can move around, on a stand.
I'm probably just going to end up making a head gate that slides into the barn, like into the floor of the barn.
Yeah.
Because that's probably, I mean, she's tall enough to where you can just sit beside her and milk, if I had to guess.
Yeah, I could sit on like a little stool or on the ground or something.
I mean, she's a big goat. Yeah. She's a small cow.
Yeah, I could crawl under her.
I mean, Sadie's ran underneath her before.
Yeah.
Ruby runs under. What are we talking
about? Yeah, that's
true. Ruby runs over and under.
I mean, our neighbor literally thought that Ruby was her baby, and she's full grown.
That's true.
Like, she's like, oh, the mama and the baby. And I'm like, no.
Two different breeds.
Two different breeds. They're not related at all, and they're both full grown.
Yep. But, yeah, I think milk stand training was really cool to watch, because we had talked about it and talked about it and talked about it, and I had fiddled around a little bit with, like, looking at other plans online. And, first of all, I feel like the amount of money that people want you to pay for a blueprint to build one of those is ridiculous, because there's a lot of plans out there and some of them are very expensive, plus the price of the wood. Like, if you're any good at building anything, it's not difficult to build.
Yeah.
I mean, I literally just came up with it sitting in Lowe's parking lot, looking at a few pictures that you had showed me, sketched it out, come up with a cut list and figured it out on my own.
Yeah, see, you're good at that kind of stuff, though. It would take me a day probably to sit there and like put it together in my head. Like, I can see a picture and say this is what I want, but like to sit there and like figure out what length of boards and like how many I would need. See, I would probably went and bought like 1, 2, 3 however many boards that are like going across for like the part they stand on.
Well, like, you've had a lot of extra.
I'd probably had a lot of extra.
Well, I did that accidentally whenever I was building the gate for the barn, like the swing gate that closes off the stall. I accidentally got almost 16 feet too many boards, but that's just also because I wasn't 100% sure in my design until I got home.
Yeah,
but it's okay, there's many more projects for that. But anyways, like I was saying, the milk stand training was completely new for me, watching like the goats not even be familiar with the milk stand, and then learning like I get treats if I stand on this thing really still, and then them learning like it's okay to have my neck shut in this thing. Like, I don't know, it was like the very first time they were not okay with it at all, except for Ruby.
Yeah, Ruby loved it. She didn't want to get off of it. She stood up there for like an hour.
That just goes to show you desensitization, I guess. That's a big word, but we've been desensitizing her since we got her.
Well,
we've been rubbing all over her.
We got her at 7 weeks old. Yeah.
Something like that.
So we've raised her from a baby. She knows us. She trusts us.
Whereas, she gets mad when we mess with the other goats.
Yes. She's jealous. She's our jealous little child.
We literally have to lock her in a stall.
Yeah. So now the other two, they were raised on the farm that we got them from. And she said that they were very tame, like, when she had the time to be with them. But she said the last year of her life had been super hectic and had brought her attention away from the goats, so she wasn't able to spend as much time with them, so they were a little skittish. So when we got them, it took us a while to build up trust. We're still working on it with Bunny, but Bonnet's finally got there.
Neither one of them trusts me. First, which is funny because I fed them, like, it shows you the intimacy that they have to have with you to be on the milk stand, because you've worked with them more so on the milk stand, whereas I throw them hay almost every single day.
Yeah.
At least once or twice a day. And they could care less that I throw them hay. They would much rather get the sweet feed from you and you sit there and pet and rub and trim their hooves and everything else.
Yeah, and I also brush them too and talk to them.
Yeah, I don't talk to them as
much.
And
beat them out of my hand.
But it shows a lot of intimacy for them to be comfortable to be on the milk stand, which I'm still working on. I think Bonnie likes me. Obviously, Ruby, she's our child.
She adores you.
She climbs up in my lap and wants to be pet. But Bonnie, I think, won't be near as hard. She already trusts me more. She'll come and rub up on my leg. Bunny, trust nobody.
Yeah, I don't know. She is very skittish. Like, whenever we got them, like, they would both come up to me, like, and they'll both eat out of my hand. But, like, if you, like, go to touch them or bend down to, like, pet them, or not them anymore, Bunny, though, she will run away. Bonnet will stand there and let you pet her now. And used to, she would only let me pet her on the head, but if I tried to pet her on the neck or the back, she would run off. Now she'll let me pet her wherever. Bunny won't even let me touch her head hardly. But she'll stand still on the milk stand, though, now. She used to kick like crazy.
Oh, yeah.
Bonnet never really kicked. She just, like, moved back and forth.
Right.
But Bunny, yeah, she, I'm hoping she'll eventually trust me like Bonnet does now, but.
Yeah.
I know it's better than it used to be.
I hope they both trust like Ruby does.
Yeah.
That's what I hope, eventually. I mean, Ruby literally just, like, she had never seen a milk stand before. She literally just, like, tapped on it and was like, come on, get up here. And she just hopped up and she was like, oh, I put my head through this thing.
I don't even have feed.
No, she's just that way.
Yeah, but anyways, back to the topic, which we're kind of on it but kind of off.
I mean, there's not a whole lot to talk about milk stands.
Yeah, I mean, but just the training, and then the main part is that we get them up there and then let them eat their feed meal off out of it with their heads being in the little gate, so that way they can't jump away, and we will rub around their udder area so that they get used to us being in the area of that, so that way they won't have such a shock when we milk them or try to milk them after they kit. So that's the main reason why we're doing that now, is so that way we're not trying to train them on that and milk them at the same time, because I feel like that'll be a lot of frustration if it wasn't already kind of familiar. At least I know it'll be a different sensation actually milking them, but if they're already comfortable standing up there and me touching them and sitting beside them and all that, then it's going to be a lot less difficult to transition into that.
Whenever you're milking, though, they will have, it'll be more than just a treat, because obviously we're going to be doing kid sharing, so it'll be more than just a treat. So you'll be taking relief from them,
right?
Because obviously, like, when their udders get really full and they need a kid to take the relief off of that, they won't have that because we're planning on doing the kid sharing. So that'll be you taking the relief off. So it'll be more than just a treat. Right. So I think that'll gain even more trust.
Yeah, after a few days, they should learn that I'm the one relieving, or you. So they should learn that in order to get relief, they have to stand still and let me milk them. And I think they'll eventually, like, realize that, A, they're getting to eat their feed up there, and B, they're getting relief. So
I mean, they already enjoy it much more than they did the first day.
Definitely. So yeah, so that's the milk stand training. And then nutrition, as far as nutrition, I don't feed especially during the summer months much. It's more like as a treat until the last month of pregnancy, and then I start to slowly up their feed intake, just to start giving them more nutrition because the babies are taking more nutrients from them. And obviously, whenever we're milking them, they're going to need more feed intake in order to keep producing milk, more protein and all that stuff. So, and then we're also starting to feed them some alfalfa and Timothy hay mixes along with their normal grass hay mix. So that's just healthier for them and provides them with some more protein and nutrients than just like normal grass hay, just to help them with production and everything. And that'll be continued on until we dry them off, I guess.
Yeah, pretty much.
And then, of course, they get their minerals, their loose minerals that are out all the time. That's a given for year-round.
And they sure do love it. It's like a feeding frenzy. You rattle a bag around them goats, and every single one of them, it don't matter what they're doing, you just see little eyeballs peek around the corner like, what you got?
I know. Like, literally, it could be, like, still have some minerals in there and not even be completely empty, and I'll come to refill it, and they'll act like it's, like, some brand-new snack or something.
Whenever there's been a few times where, like, I've been building something out in the driveway, and, like, I'll open a bag of beef jerky or, like, a bag of chips or something, and the goat's just, like, all of a sudden come out of the running shed or something. Like, what you got there, my friend?
Yes, they...
Of course, them and the chickens.
Yeah, they like their snacks, even though we really don't feed them much snacks, just other than, like,
I say literally just feed.
And some of those little probiotic treats.
Yeah, like three.
Yeah, I think that's a serving size for those things. But anyways, and then we have our kitting kit that we get ready to go. We like to have everything in one place and ready to go, so that way we're not running around like chickens with our heads cut off on day of kitting. So that way we know where everything's at. We can just grab it and go. So here is what is in our kitting kit based on experiences I had growing up on the farm, what was in the kitting kits we kept there, and then also what we have learned and researched ourselves recently to add to it, just because I've learned a lot about dairy goats over the last year and a half or so.
Yeah. I feel like our kitting kit serves more than just a big kit for kitting. Like, it's pretty much just like mostly our kitting kit, but it's also kind of like our animal first aid kit.
Yeah, which we will have more things in that overall than is in our kitting kit, but basically some of the things, it kind of overlaps.
Right. I mean, I know there's been multiple times where anytime we do any kind of shots for the goats, we use the kitting kit because obviously it's got like the gloves and everything in it too. So yeah.
So I'll probably I know it's in like a box right now with all the rest of the stuff, but for kitting purposes over the next like week or two, I'll probably put all the kitting kit supplies in a bucket, so that way it's just all that's ready to go.
I was actually thinking about putting it in our first aid kit, like our actual like go bag that I have.
Why?
Because then it's ready to go.
Well, the bucket will be ready to go.
All right. Sounds good to me then.
So anyways, as we just said, a bucket, which we'll use to put some warm water and either molasses or electrolytes mixed in with that to give for when, after she's done giving birth, to kind of replenish some nutrients, electrolytes, you know, make her drink some water. And then the next thing, of course, is gloves, in case we have to glove up and go in for any reason. We could need to be repositioning a baby or feeling around to see what we feel, if we're having issues, which we hope and pray that we don't have to do that. But you never know, and it's better to be prepared than not. So
all I'm saying is, if we have issues with one of the minis, I got big hands, so it's going to be all you.
The good thing about me is I have tiny hands. So,
and experience.
Yeah, I might not be a tiny person, but I have tiny hands. So I don't know why. But it wouldn't be the first time I've had a hand in a goat or ear before. Yeah, but anyways. And then the next thing is towels, and that will be to dry babies off, put down for them to land on to keep from getting dirtied, if depending on where we're at. Hopefully they'll be in the little barn area that's going to be clean, but I mean, you can't really tell goats what to do And if they're going to be all upset for us dragging them in there, I'd rather have them in the pasture or something, unless it's like downpouring the rain, then move them in there after, you know.
I say if it's raining like it is right now outside, whenever they're trying to have a kid in the pasture, we're dragging that sucker in the barn.
Yeah. Well, anyways, and then towels, and then NutriDrench. That's just like filled with like all kinds of like vitamins, minerals, healthy stuff. It's like all in one punch, a power punch kind of.
Mm-hmm.
That we would give to mama if she had a struggle or it was seeming to be, you know, having a hard time after giving birth. And then iodine, which we will use to dip the baby's umbilical cord in, so that way it prevents infection, because that's like basically a streamline right into their body, because that was what the mama was hooked to. So
it's an IV.
Yeah, so it'll, if germs get in that, I mean,
you're in trouble.
They're dead, basically. Yeah. Yep. And then small cups for the iodine. So we'll probably just take like a small medicine cup and pour some in, and then we'll just like dip the umbilical cord in or up into that. So we're not touching it or anything. And then we'll have some scissors in there too to trim that if needed. We don't want to trim it too short, but we'll definitely trim it if it's like super long.
Mm-hmm.
And then, I already mentioned this a little bit, but electrolytes and or molasses. I think I have electrolytes already in there from when we gave Ethel some when she had diarrhea last summer. But, they're goat electrolytes. But I might get some molasses too, because everybody says goats love that, which that's what we use growing up too.
I'm down with it.
Yeah. So, and then we also have some nipples, that go on to like, you can get a bottle like specifically for them, like at Tractor Supply, but typically, especially growing up, we would always use like a 1 liter, like very good, like washed out soda bottle or like water bottle or something like that.
Good old sanitized bottle.
Yep. That's what we always use growing up to feed babies, because we've had to bottle feed several.
I mean, if everything goes as planned, you shouldn't have to, but you have to plan for it to not work.
Right. Because if they give birth in the middle of the night and worst comes to worst, we have to bottle feed a baby, I don't want to have to wait until Tractor Supply opens up to go get milk or milk replacer, which is the next thing on our list is colostrum. Ideally, they'll get it from their mama and it won't be a big deal, but if anything goes wrong, or we could milk mama if she wasn't letting them nurse, we could potentially milk her and give them the colostrum that way. But we just want to be prepared just in case. So yeah, that, and then milk replacer is also another thing, which that wouldn't be as, we could make do if we didn't have that on hand immediately.
Also, kind of, it reminded me when you was talking about the colostrum. When you're looking for, like, the milk replacer, colostrum, vitamin B, which you haven't said yet, but anything like that, search around, because the price varies drastically depending on where you get it from. I'm not going to say any names specifically of manufacturers, but shop around, because what you got the other day from one store was quick math, it was literally almost three times the price.
Well, that was also because the one at the other store that we got for cheaper goes out of date in June, I believe, and the other one doesn't for a couple of years, and they were trying to sell it quick. It was like marked off like for $3.
Well, if you know
the
bag
instead of,
if you know kids and season's happening before June, go ahead and get it.
Right, exactly.
So, but yeah, search around, shop.
So yeah, and then vitamin B, which that's just a good thing to keep around for goats anyways. And then a bulb syringe, just in case we need to suction any mucus out of the baby's nose or mouth or anything. Hopefully we'll just be able to wipe it right out and the mama will clean her, him or her, up good. But just in case we did have to do something like that with the story I was telling earlier about the little boy who was born breech, he had a lot of mucus. But yeah, so that's basically what's in our kitting kit based on our experiences in the past and research we've done recently. So of course that's going to be adjusted, you know, for whatever needs your herd has. But yeah, that's basically what we have. So, and then the next thing we like, we want our goats to have is a warm, dry place, which we kind of talked about already. And we've obviously been talking about that the past couple episodes with Roman building the pallet barn. So, we'll want a warm, dry place to either move them before kidding. That's ideally, hopefully, what they'll let us do. But if they're being ornery and we don't want to upset them and cause more stress to them. So if they're being ornery and don't want to move, we will move them there after kidding so they can have a nice place to bond and not be distracted by the rest of the herd, especially Ruby, because I'm sure she'll be all up in their business. Like I said, that's why we just built this large pallet barn.
Not only that, Ruby's a brat and I don't trust her not to try and harm anything. She may try to harm the new babies.
Yeah,
and
then
she may get hurt in the process whenever a mom jacks her.
Yeah, who knows? We'll see. I feel like once she becomes a mother, she's going to calm down drastically. But at the same time, part of me thinks she's going to be a terrible mother.
Yeah,
I hope
she's
not.
A brat. That's all I know.
I mean, she's so sweet to us. Like, she loves us. I think she's just jealous is her whole problem.
I didn't know a goat could be that jealous. Literally, she can walk into a pasture. She can literally walk into another goat's pasture if we're in there and get all fluffed up like a billy goat and immediately, like, she doesn't want the feed that they have. She doesn't want the hay that they have. She just literally wants them to go away.
Yeah.
That's it. She starts headbutting and bullying everything.
Yeah, she's funny. But anyways, so, but yeah, they'll have, with this new little pallet barn, they'll have a nice warm, dry place to go that's not on the hillside. I mean, it is on the hillside, but it's just been leveled, so
it's flat.
Yeah, and then we've also got the little kidding stall in there that Ethel couldn't fit in there, but obviously the rest of the barn she can, so we can shut the gate if needed and put one in there to
well
kid.
Luckily, the way that I built it, if worst comes to worst and we have to have two mothers in there at the same time, we can put the temporary fence up there where, like, the barn door is,
mm-hmm.
and connect it to the edge of the barn and make a little, like, paddocks up there.
Yeah.
And then I can swing the gate out halfway, and then we can stop it right there. And then we can put a baby gate, just like a regular baby gate you would use in your house, in between the stall door and the actual, like, wall of the barn, and completely divide the barn in half.
Yeah. Yep, and the little stall, a Nigerian dwarf could kid in there, or you put in there if needed, and then...
Well, Bunny and Bonnie's first night in there.
They slept in there
they
together.
They both slept in there together, and there was room enough for another.
Yeah, so they're small. So, yeah, if we need that as a separate kidding area, that'll be there. And then, of course, that's where we're going to put babies when we start kid sharing. That's where they'll be... locked away. That sounds mean, but that's where they'll be locked away at night when they get old, a little bit older, and then we'll milk out the mamas in the morning before letting them out.
Yep. It's not mean. It keeps them safe, and it gives us a little bit of milk. So, which, if anybody is wondering, which I don't think anybody listening really cares except for people like-minded like me, the stall is 42 inches by 38 and a half, I believe. So, it's about the same size as like a very, like the extra large crates that you can get, like a wire crate.
Yeah, the very, the extra, extra large ones.
Right.
Yeah.
And then it is, I think it's literally like 46 inches tall. So it's tall enough to where they can't jump out of it, hopefully.
Well, we can always put
right,
like a little.
We can put something over it. But my goal was hopefully they can't jump out of it.
Yeah. So. Ethel can fit in there, but it definitely wouldn't be comfortable for kidding for her in there. But the miniatures, definitely.
Yeah, for sure.
So, anyway, so back to the topic. So, now we're going to kind of talk about, like, what we've experienced in the past for signs that a doe is about to kid. So, in our experience, there's several... signs that a doe is about to kid, and not in super any particular order, But number one, she bags up, which we've already talked about that a little bit, which is when her udder starts to fill up with milk. And like I said before, it can be weeks before or it can be days or hours before. So you just kind of have to know your goat on, and if it's their first freshening, like it is for, it will be for Ruby and Bonnet, and then it'll be Bunny's second, but we've never seen her. So all of these, I'm going to be taking like all kinds of notes. So that way next year, like I know.
We've already been taking pictures.
Yeah.
We take pictures weekly.
Right. So I can look back and see, well, yeah, she's definitely gotten bigger or whatever.
Right. We have a pretty good idea with Ethel. She is getting large bags right now, but I specifically remember because I have a video of it when I sent it to you, because I think you were getting off work or whatever, but I sent it to you and I was like, hey, I think we need to put Ethel in the barn before, and it was very large bags, and her nipples were extremely engorged.
Last time she kidded.
Yes.
Yeah. So yeah, and then second thing, which we've already talked about, is the ligaments loosen and disappear. Which the ligaments are that V shape, that come up from the tail on either side of like the tailbone. And on a normal day without being pregnant or whatever, they are more on the hard side. And then as you get closer and closer to kidding, they get looser and looser. They go from like a rubber band to like a, I can't remember.
It's like I think you described it as like, it goes from like hard to a tennis ball to like a stretched out rubber band, or to a rubber band to a stretched out rubber band, and then they pretty much, they disappear.
Yeah.
Like literally you can't feel a thing.
Yeah. So that's just like the pelvic ligaments relaxing and loosening and getting ready for birth is what that is. And then number three, the baby or babies drop, so it looks like her stomach is sagging. That's another sign, and then the pelvic bones will be more prominently shown. So it looks like there's like a swag there.
It looks like, to describe it to somebody who has never seen like a belly drop before, it literally looks like a stereotypical like Jersey cow, like that swag, how their back looks swayed, mm-hmm. and you can see their pelvic bones. Like if you need a reference, just look up like a Jersey cow.
Yeah. Number four, she'll start to have some discharge, which some goats don't have any until they're about to go into labor. Some can have discharge for up to like a week before, like the mucus discharge. I don't think it's normal to like bleed for a week before, but I know it's normal, can be normal for some goats to have like a mucusy discharge or the plug or whatever. And then another thing, she can get super restless, like pawing the ground, verbally upset. She may not want to eat. You can just tell, you know, that she's not feeling the best or that she's not super comfortable.
I think if I remember correctly, the only thing that Ethel really did, like attitude wise, is she didn't really eat her hay like she typically does. Like she just kind of like nosed it around.
Yeah.
And she kept laying on the hay. Like she would nose it around and lay on the hay.
Bed.
And then she would like, typically when goats lay down, they'd kind of like tuck their feet underneath them. Kind of like the little cat loaf check thing.
Mm-hmm.
But she kept laying down and like sticking her legs straight out to the side.
Yeah. Yeah. And then growing up, one of the goats on the farm, she would paw the ground. Like we knew she was going to be going into labor in a couple of days. She would start pawing the ground a lot. And as it came closer and closer to time, she would paw it a lot more, and then I guess just probably starting to feel uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
But
the only animal I know that I've ever seen paw the ground when they're pregnant was Paisley.
Mm-hmm. Your
German Shepherd.
But yeah, not our German Shepherd, but the one.
Well, it is your parents' German Shepherd,
right? That I grew up with. But yeah, and then another thing, she may isolate herself from the rest of the herd, which is pretty normal. She doesn't want to be around the other stresses of the other goats getting in her way. And then lastly, another sign that we've seen, obviously, it's a very obvious one, is the water sac busts. That's like a big bubble.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so those are the things that we like to look for. I'm sure there's more that other people might have to add to that list, but that's just in our experience what we've seen.
I mean, the water sack bust is pretty much like...
they're in active labor.
Well, I mean, that's exactly the same as like whenever you hear a woman say like, my water broke.
Yeah.
Same difference.
Yeah. So, yeah. So, we've already said that 150 days is like average for most goats. I've heard like typically it's like between 145 and 155, I think, is like the general, but yeah. So like knowing like your best guess on the calendar is also a good indication of when they will kid also, because like we know Ethel's exact due date. So it should be somewhere within 10 days or less of that day.
Right. Well, we know the exact day that Ethel was bred too.
Exactly. So yeah.
Almost to the hour.
Mm-hmm. So the majority of the kiddings that I've been a part of, and obviously the one that you've been a part of, has been, you know, has gone smoothly and had no issues. But there's been several, like I was talking about earlier, where we've had to help. So we always like to be prepared and have a game plan in case something goes wrong. And we always like to have, in case we need help or need extra hands or whatever, we always like to have someone that we trust that knows more than us, obviously, or something that we can call.
Luckily, our like large animal vet, Justin, they're good friends. We've used them in the past. They've been to your parents' farm a ton. They know where we live. Like, we're always in contact with them, like, with talking about the goats and stuff. So, like, they actually know most of the goats already, or at least have examine their fecal. But like, yeah. They actually know Ethel very well, because when she was at your parents' farm, that she would always come up to them for treats whenever they came to do rounds for like the horses and stuff.
Yeah,
so they know Ethel very well. They don't know Ruby other than her poop, and they don't know Bonnie and Bunny other than their poop. But they're I don't know, I love them as vets. They're super nice, friendly, very informative, and they don't do a lot of like, it's whatever you feel like. They're like, this is what you need to do. Do it.
Yeah. Yeah. They've been very helpful, and they've sent us a lot of information on goat care too. So learned a lot from them over the years, because I've known them for a long time. Because they came out when my horse was,
Well, not only that, they came out.
Well, I mean, I'm saying like from the time, because I had Red, I got him when I was like, elementary school, in tail end of elementary school, and like they would come out and do checkups on him, you know, and do yearly Coggins and shots, and if he ever got an abscess, which he got several,
his abscess in his feet that he got all the time.
Yeah, he got several hoof abscesses throughout the winter sometimes, and then of course and then of course whenever we had to put him down from old age, they were the ones that came out, and we dealt with that for several months before we actually made the decision. But and then they sent me a card after, which was sweet.
Yep.
But
I mean, they're not just like I feel like a lot of people are like, yeah, you know, I've got they're the vet or whatever. They might even know the vet by name and they might like them. But I mean, to us, Justin and their family is friends and family to us.
If you can ugly cry in front of your vet when you lose an animal, they're friends. Even if you weren't before, like, you're definitely more than what you are. We know that we can definitely call our vet if we need anything, and I'm sure they would come out. Hopefully, it won't be in the middle of the night, so we don't have to deal with an emergency nighttime call, which we've done that before for a horse, which I feel like a goat is not as extreme as a horse, but we'll see. I don't know.
I know how much money we've got tied up in them, so I'd hate to lose them on account of, like, an emergency vet bill.
Yeah, we'll see. Definitely, I would do everything I could to save. I mean, they're like our family, so our pets are our family. But we're hoping and praying that we don't have any issues and that we have smooth kidding season. So hopefully that goes well. So banking on the fact that we have no issues. So after kidding care, kind of the first thing we'll do as the kids are coming out is wipe off mucus from the nose, mouth, eyes, suction the nose if we need to, make sure mama is cleaning them, you know, and is being attentive to them, which if she's not, we can continue to clean them with a towel, but
yeah,
and a good mama will clean their babies good.
I'm going to say Ethel, we know, is a good mom because she literally birthed all three of them with no help. When I showed up, she had already birthed to clean them.
Yeah.
And like, I don't even think we even touched their umbilical cords. If I'm not mistaken, she kind of trimmed them up too.
Yeah, a good mama will do that.
But then the third one was literally like halfway out when I showed up. So I was freaking out, called you. And you told me just if she's already give birth to two, don't touch it. If as long as it's head first and it's coming out, leave it be.
Yep.
As soon as little Junior was born, Ethel turned around and started cleaning them up. And it's very, like, goats are so nimble. It's kind of strange to watch them, like, stumble around. And, like, I was very worried about it. Like, I was sending you all the videos and everything, wondering why they weren't, like, bouncing around and stuff. But it was literally just because they had just been born. So it takes them a few, like at least an hour or so to get their footing to where they can actually walk around.
Yeah, usually it takes them a good while to figure out how to stand up. But yeah, you want to make sure they're at least trying to do that. And then, of course, after making sure the babies are good, that they can breathe, and that they're getting cleaned off, always make sure to check mama and see if she's having another or is going to have another, because you definitely don't want to miss that. Because you can think she's done and then walk off or something and then come back out and you have another baby or two. I've heard that you can bump them, which basically you're like giving them a hug and then like kind of pushing up on their bellies. And if it just kind of squishes, they don't have anything else in there. But if it like comes back down kind of like hard, then there's another baby in there. That's not exactly, but basically...
Sounds intense. I have not. That's literally that is my gut reaction, what you just saw right there.
Really?
Never heard of that.
Oh. I guess you wouldn't, though. Really. But I've never done that to a goat because I've never, like, questioned if she's having another. She's always either, like, immediately went to that, or we could tell because she started pawing again and acting uncomfortable again. Some of them will literally act fine and sit there and clean their baby for 30 minutes. And then you'll be like, okay, she's nursing. And then you'll walk off to go inside because it's like the middle of the night.
Plop.
And then you come back out there. I mean, I've never walked off that fast, but I've heard some people do that. But yeah, and then always offer mama like a warm bucket of water with some molasses or electrolytes, which we've already kind of mentioned, to help replenish her. And then... also, at that point, we'd also probably give her some NutriDrench and or B vitamins if she had a hard labor, depending on how the birthing went. But it's also never a bad idea to give B vitamins. But and then making sure the babies are standing up and that they're not having any leg issues or anything like that, and making sure that they're trying to nurse and get that colostrum, and making sure that they get a good latch when they do, and that mama's not, you know, butting them away and all that, making sure that she's letting them nurse.
Yeah, that was the only really issue last time with Ethel's first freshening, was that Opie and Clover latched very quickly and were nursing super fast, and Junior did not want to latch for some reason. He just kept like... I don't know. He had a hard time standing up, first of all. He was also, like, he was the runt, so he was a little bit smaller than everybody else. But for some reason, it took us a while to get him to latch. But eventually, he did. It was almost to the point to where we were about to start, like, milking for some colostrum to give him a bottle.
Yeah. I know one time growing up, there was the mama had twins, and she would not... let her babies nurse for nothing. And sometimes all it takes, which is what happened with her, we thought we were going to have to bottle feed them. We thought they were going to be bottle babies, which of course is, you know, like 11 and 9-year old little girls. Me and my sister were so excited to have bottle babies, of course, and have them live inside, which we've had bottle lambs before from my mother that passed away. Actually, she didn't pass away. She rejected them completely. And we had, there were twin lambs, and we had to bottle feed them.
And then you had lamb chops?
No.
I wasn't sure if you ate the mama that rejected the babies.
No. No, we didn't. But yeah, we raised them until weaning with the bottle, and we kept them inside for a good while. But, and then when we started putting them out in the pasture, they would come running for their bottle.
I'm sure.
But yeah, and then, the goat, sometimes all you got to do is just hold her still long enough to let them nurse, which is, for that case, thankfully, she was not, we were trying everything, and then we just had to like tie her down basically to where she couldn't move or kick. Like we had her pinned up in the corner. We're all holding on to her, and finally she was stood still enough to let them nurse. And from then on she did, we didn't have to do that anymore, but it just took a while to get her like that. But yeah, you want to make sure they get colostrum, and get a good latch and nurse within, I'm pretty sure they say within, it has to be within 24 hours, but it's really the sooner the better. I don't know if they could, especially if a baby was struggling or anything, I don't know if they could go 24 hours without eating and still live, but.
Well, I know Junior was the last one to be born. Then it took him a while to latch, like a good 40 minutes to latch the first time. And the other two had already got some colostrum and were already like walking around just fine, and he was still stumbling around and like staring off into space.
Right.
So
yeah.
Obviously the colostrum is like, it's a zap. It's an energy boost to get the babies on the right track.
Well, it's also like antibodies, like that helps, cause they're like immune system needs that in order to make it in life basically. And whatever in their bodies lets them absorb the antibodies and stuff in the colostrum, it closes up after 24 hours. So it's not really useful after that. So especially if they have like twins or triplets, you want to make sure all of them get colostrum before the others take it all.
Right.
But yeah.
And one thing that we forgot to mention earlier too, kind of like the pre-birth care, is to make sure that you like shave the udder, like rear end area, so that way it stays cleaner.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a necessary thing. We didn't really do it much growing up, which I will say the boar goats weren't as fluffy, I feel like, as the Nigerian dwarfs. Ethel's not as fluffy as the Nigerian dwarfs. But yeah, I think it'll be helpful definitely for keeping that area cleaner. I know like dried blood and stuff is not comfortable for goats, and it usually takes them a while to get it off, and it can be itchy and pull hair off and stuff. So yeah, I think shaving them, especially the Nigerian dwarves, I think it'll be very helpful and beneficial, make it more of a clean, comfortable, less messy situation, and it'll make it easier to milk and cleaner, so there's not as much hair to fall off into the milk when you're milking too.
Yep, guess that's really it.
Yeah,
make sure they get the colostrum. Have happy, healthy babies.
Yeah. And then, yeah, just keep an eye on them, make sure they're doing good. I mean, you gotta watch them for a while, making sure that they're not gonna, like, go downhill or anything.
I mean, I don't know anybody, unless they're just a monster, I don't know anybody that can see fresh-born little baby goats and not want to sit out there with them, even if it's 3 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
I don't know anybody that just doesn't want to just sit out there with them and watch them.
Oh, yeah. It's hard to leave them.
Yeah. So, but any day now, so we should be having, the only thing that so obviously I hope that we have I guess just as kind of in closing, like, I hope that we have, like, healthy babies, and that we don't have to do a lot of intervention, and that the mamas are healthy, babies are healthy, everything goes smoothly. But I hope more than anything we don't have 3 births right on top of each other, because there's a very good possibility we could have Bunny go, Ethel go, Bonnie go.
Yeah, or any.
Or any other mix of the three.
Yes.
So
the only note, we know for a fact that Ruby is not due until like May. So that's the only good thing. So it can only be 3. At once.
I mean, there is a chance, I'm thinking of it right now. There is a chance if we went and got another baby gate that we could have two stalls on one side and then kind of like a larger running in stall on the ramp side.
Yeah.
But that would get hairy quick trying to like get him in and out to pasture.
Yeah. Well, once they're a couple of days old, they won't have to be like as much of in a nursery spot.
Right.
But, and hopefully, see, if it wasn't for Ethel, hopefully she'll chill out a little bit. She's been ornery as a pregnant woman. Hopefully. And because she's horned, we are trying to be careful because she'll just haul off and headbutt the littles.
I'm about to get so much bigger. I'm about to get some pool noodles and cut them off and put them on her head.
I didn't want to make the littles miscarry or anything. So hopefully she won't be so ornery. But she'll probably be protective of her babies, so we'll see. I know she was a protective mother last time.
But, well.
We could talk about this for hours, I'm sure.
Yeah. Well, we're at our time, especially once I go and cut out a few things. But we're at our time, so.
Yep,
I feel like this was a good episode. I'm excited. Hopefully, I mean, if everything goes as planned, hopefully the next episode we can say we had a good...
Maybe not the next episode, but like episodes coming.
Yeah, well, maybe episodes coming or soon. Hopefully, I'm just saying, hopefully soon we'll be able to say we had at least a good, healthy goat birth or a couple of good goat births.
Right, so yeah, hopefully, I'm sure whenever we do... I'm sure that whatever episode we had planned for that week will get thrown to the back burner. And yep. I'm sure we'll just record something on the fly about our experience with everything.
I'm sure.
Hopefully it's a good experience. But
yep.
But yeah, so that's pretty much all.
I mean, even if it's not a good experience, that's one thing that we always try to do is, you know, be
real.
Transparent and real and good.
The good, the bad.
Yeah. So, and the ugly, me.
Oh my. But yeah, so that is pretty much it for today. This is our experience. Like we said, I'm sure anybody else could add or take away things based on their experience, but this is what we're doing and what has worked for us in the past, so we just figured we would share it with all of you, and mm-hmm. we appreciate everyone who's listening.
Yep, and just a little update on the last time I checked, as far as how many downloads we've had, we are going up rapidly. We are almost at the 100 mark.
Wow, that's
crazy. We're about 15 downloads away from 100 downloads.
You're gonna have to stop telling me this. I'm gonna get shy.
No, it doesn't matter.
I'm shy, but at least nobody could see my face turning red.
Well, I will say this much. Literally, if the same 25 people download every single episode, it doesn't count. Like, that person still counts like one download for every episode. So it could be 25 people downloading.
Oh, gotcha.
So, but still, 100 downloads is a lot.
That's true.
So the more downloads you have, the better.
Which we also don't know how many people are actually listening, because you can listen without downloading, because I listen without
downloading. I say I listen without downloading all the time.
So we don't know how many listens we're getting.
Correct.
So, but we appreciate everyone. So.
Yep, we sure do. So I reckon we'll see you in the next episode.
Bye.